From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to welcome in Ronnie Crandall, first grade teacher at St. Francis of Assisi Parish in Midtown, right across from Sutter's Fort. I don't think there's a fourth grader in California that hasn't been to Sutter's Fort. Ronnie, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. I actually remember when I was a little kid, we went on the field trip to Sutter's Fort. And then when I had kids, we went on the field trips to Sutter's Fort.
There are always buses over there.
Yes, indeed. Well, and St. Francis is, oh my, it's a breathtaking church. Oh my goodness.
We're very fortunate, yes.
How long has that school been there?
Over 125 years.
So one of the oldest schools in the diocese.
It was a Catholic high school for years, but it's been a grade school, TK through 8th, for well before I was there.
How long have you been there?
I have been there for 27 years.
Okay.
Always first grade.
Always first grade?
Yes.
And where were you prior to that? In college, I presume.
Well, in college and also a different career, and I subbed for a little while, and then I landed at St. Francis and fell in love with it. I've been there ever since.
So this was your first teaching?
Yeah, pretty much. It was my second career.
Did you have to go back to school to get a credential and do all that?
Yeah.
Wow. What were you in before?
An obsolete major. My major was home economics.
Oh, my goodness. I went to UC Davis, and back then, home economics, that was sort of the female major, and ag econ was the boy major, and there was the home ec building there, you know.
Yes, and now I know I'm dating myself.
Yeah, it's funny. Did you go to Davis?
No, I went to Sac State.
Okay.
Yeah,
but it's funny. My Gabe's giving me the thumbs up. He's a Sac State alum. He's a Hornet. His Stingers are up right now.
It is a great school.
It is, you know, and they have a brand new president.
Yes.
Who very young. He's like 41, and he grew up in McLeod, way up in Siskiyou County.
Oh yeah.
And he really is. He really wants to expand the reach, so it's for everybody.
Yeah,
you know, like the reach people that maybe they're the first in their family to have a chance to college. It reminds you a little bit of the Cristo Rey model here in Sacramento.
Yeah, that's a great school.
And it brings tears to my eyes when sometimes it could be a lot of talk and you don't get the budget you want or something, but I think he's really sincere that he really wants to make it even more accessible than it already is. So and he's the new president of Sac State, so I wish him well.
That's, I do too.
And boy, there are a lot of Sac State alums around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you grew up in the Sacramento area?
Yeah, it's kind of in a rural area, halfway between Sacramento and Marysville, Yuba City.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's either Highway 70 or 99 or 90. Yeah.
So
made that right a few times.
Going to school at Sac State was a big move for a rural girl.
Yeah. What was your parish?
It was in East Nicholas, St. Boniface. Tiny little parish.
Yeah, right along the river. And
Fair River, yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, wonderful. So how did you end up teaching first grade?
Well,
obviously you love it.
Yes, and it seems like teachers just find what their niche is. Like, I could not do junior high, and our junior high teachers often tell me they could never teach the little ones, so I love to read, and I love teaching children to read, and I love seeing the joy on their faces when they discover they can read, and so that's just really rewarding for me.
Yeah, I have six kids, and they all, it was different with every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their learning pattern, and when they, you know, we had one who didn't talk till she was three,
right.
You know, and one that was maybe at 11 or 12 months, so it was getting a few words out, you know, but the three could express herself better than the one that didn't talk till she was three could express herself better than anybody. And then, you know, just the books where at first, especially when it's your first child, you think they're learning to read, and they're remembering the picture of what you said. And you think, look, she can read.
Yeah, but memory's also a part of reading.
It sure is. Yeah. I mean, it's funny when you look at a word, like I'm looking at variations on a piece of paper here, and my brain has already pre-processed that word as to what it means. And so it's visual, but it's all about memory.
Oh, yeah. So, and that's also fun to teach children new vocabulary. And then, you know, they start using these words and the parents get a kick out of how grown up they, like, they'll come home and say, I challenged myself today.
Oh, wow.
So it's fun to see that. It's never a dull moment in first grade.
Yeah.
They are just so honest and joyful, and they love to learn, and they love and respect their teachers and their school and their church. So it's a win-win.
Yeah. So speaking of challenges, what's the biggest challenge in teaching first grade at a Catholic school here in Midtown? Like you said, it's kind of a magnet. It's not a, quote, magnet school, but it really attracts from a wide area.
Yes, because we are kind of considered a commuter school. We have a lot of state workers and government workers, and so they come to into Midtown or downtown to work.
Right.
And a lot of them want a Catholic education for their children, so it just makes sense. St. Francis is a good fit for them, and then we're blessed by it because we have such a diverse school property population.
Right.
They come from Elk Grove, Natomas, Roseville. We even had a family that came all 9 years from Shingle Springs.
My goodness.
Yeah.
It's quite the ride.
And then sometimes families have moved or changed jobs, and then they think they're going to change schools. And we've had children that leave for a year, and then they convince mom and dad they want to come back. So mom and dad make the sacrifice of coming back in. We're really blessed with not only a diverse school population, but just such a warm community, very welcoming to everyone. And that's what families love about it, the family feel.
Yeah, indeed. I remember my two oldest kids both went to St. James in Davis. And the thing that I really liked was that, not if something was wrong, but if anything was going on with your child, you got a phone call.
Yes.
And it was just so comforting to know that it was like family. They were there to let us know, how they were doing. And then I do remember a commute to Jesuit with my son. It was, oh my, especially the going to pick them up in the late afternoon and then trying to get back to Davis, it was.
Yes, and then all their after school activities. All the,
yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, so there was a lot there. So people do make a lot of sacrifices. And so in the 27 years, how has education, especially for first graders, how has that changed, if at all, in your time?
Well, it's definitely changed because even the first graders are, using computers and things like that. But it's also changed because they have been playing video games or playing on their parents' tablets or phones since they were little. So sometimes it's a real challenge to get them to be interested in pencil paper.
Uh-huh.
Because
is that still a real requirement at that age, the pencil paper?
It really is because even though you can use a keyboard, you have to know how to communicate on paper. And,
right.
Yes, they do still need pencil paper, and they need to look at written words and turn pages in books and all of that. I just think it makes them more well-rounded.
Has the curriculum changed at all in 27
Definitely.
Years? In what way?
Well, the way math is taught is...
We discovered the moon wasn't made out of cheese, so we had to change that.
Yes, and the math is taught differently. It's not just memorization. First graders are given strategies on how to solve problems, and we realize everyone's brain works differently, like you were saying, with reading and with math, too. So children kind of are introduced to different strategies on how to solve math problems, and then they kind of figure out which way their brain works best, and it's really helpful for them. Like, I struggled with math. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see patterns and numbers and how all of that fit together. And so by showing children there are different ways to solve problems, I think it helps them not feel like they're failing at something. There's always a way to solve a problem.
It strikes me as so difficult to be a teacher with, what, 30 kids or something like that?
35.
35, yeah. And they're, especially at that age where the development, I see this in youth athletics a lot, like some kid grew faster or something, right. And, oh, man, he's going to be playing in the pros or something. And then he gets to junior high and he stopped growing, and the other kids, you know, who thought they were terrible are suddenly...
Yeah,
you know, and it's the same thing. I would think intellectually, the development.
Yes.
That, but you've got to deal with 35 individuals.
Mm, yeah, and that's challenging, but it's also
how
fun.
Many subjects?
Yeah. Well, I teach math. Their math, their reading, their social studies, their penmanship. They do have a Spanish teacher, PE teacher. And performing arts teacher too. So,
do you do some foreign language?
We do Spanish, and then in junior high, the kids also have the option of Italian.
Okay.
So, yeah, mm-hmm. But the first graders start out with Spanish.
I made the mistake of taking Spanish in junior high and high school, and I was really good at memorizing vocabulary, but never having had to use it on a regular basis,
right.
I could never really speak it. I could hear some words and kind of. And went to college, and they give you that entrance, you know,
exam
just to where you, a placement.
Right.
And they said, oh, well, your Spanish vocabulary is very good. We're going to place you in Spanish 5, which is taught in Spanish. And I just, I was a freshman, I just about died. I said, I'm going to flunk that class. Mm-hmm. And so I started over in Italian. And it was the worst mistake of my life because it was so close, but it was just a little bit different. And I'd get into the exam and I'd say buono instead of bueno, or vice versa, and didn't know where to put the accents. And it was a struggle.
That's why it's kind of nice. They start in kindergarten with our Spanish teacher, and they just kind of learn to name things.
Uh-huh.
And then as they progress through the school years, they... you know, start understanding how to form sentences and all that. So by the time they graduate from eighth grade, they've got a pretty good handle.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you have a fair number of kids who speak Spanish or from a Spanish-speaking home?
Yeah, a fair number. Like I said, we are a diverse school, so we do have some that are fluent. Some have come as English is their second language, but they pick up right away. So
they say with foreign languages, the earlier the better.
Oh yeah, it's great to when they're bilingual by first grade. Yeah,
and that, and it's, especially in California. I mean, you want to get a good job, you better be bilingual.
Yes.
Yeah, it's almost a requirement. So, with math, what's a goal in first grade math? We used to call it arithmetic. And I don't know where that stopped, and it became math, and then it became algebra, and,
right.
You know, I was one of those kids that numbers were my friends. I loved it. I didn't do very good in the other subjects at all, but there was something about math that just really clicked. My dad would throw numbers at me at the dinner table and multiply them in your head, you know, that kind
of
stuff. And it was so much fun. But then... I remember and did pretty good all the way through school, got into algebra, that made sense, got to geometry, and to me that had nothing to do with math. And I did I almost didn't graduate from high school because geometry was just, it made no sense to me, you know, and a triangle had nothing to do with math, you know.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, you know, everybody's math brain works differently because I could do geometry, but I did not see those patterns with numbers.
Yeah.
And so in first grade, we do start with patterns and understanding that and skip count and all that. And then they start, we do a lot of story problems, and they actually, by mid-year, they're doing algebra. They just don't realize it. It's just
wow.
the way it's lots of story problems. But, you know, they learn how to, you know, like I said, use strategies. And then, like right now, we're in geometry. And they love it because we've got a lot of shapes and solid figures that they mm-hmm. can play with and build with. And I think that helps, like you were talking about geometry, is to actually be able to hold a hexagon, trace around it, hold a sphere.
It's really visual. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But they know what a rectangular prism is. They know what a sphere is. They know that a cube is a special kind of rectangle. And again, that's why it's fun in first grade, because everything's so exciting to them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everything, yes.
So do they know what pi is?
Not that kind.
Because who is it that has, somebody has a pi day, I forget.
Yeah, a lot of schools have a pi day.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, is that maybe fifth or sixth grade? And then our students have actually had pi on pi day.
Oh, that's great. I think there was a pizza parlor that did that. They were going to charge $3.14, probably not for a whole pizza anymore, maybe for a slice or something.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Anything to make math fun.
Yeah, I find it, you know, when pi is part of so many different formulas, but it's not exact. 3.14 is not exact. 2 is exact. 3 is exact, but 3.14 is not exact. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. How do you build a big building if it's not exact?
Right.
You know, yeah. I've never quite figured that out.
And that's why I stay with first grade math.
Yeah. Very good. So speaking of math, you've got some exciting news.
The Math Bowl?
Yeah.
Yes, we just had our Diocesan Math Bowl of few weeks ago, and our third grade boy that was in it won for the Sacramento Diocese. He won top place.
What's his name? It can be just first name.
Everett.
Everett, like Mount Everett.
Right.
Everest. Everett, wow. Tell us a little bit about him.
He has always loved math, even before he started school, his parents mm-hmm. said. So it just comes naturally to him. He sees all those patterns. And actually, all the kids that were in the Math Bowl, we had them, they'd compete first grades through fifth grade. And they either get those patterns by first grade or, I mean, if they do, they're good candidates for the Math Bowl.
Right.
Because they just see those patterns. And it's a mental Math Bowl. So they don't have pencil and paper in uh-huh. front of them. They have to just answer the questions, you know, within seconds of.
And is it first graders against first graders?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think this year we had, well, there's 10 kids in each round. I think there were like 160 kids that competed.
Wow, from a number of diocesan schools.
Yes, everywhere. They come from the Bay Area and Red Bluff.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Did they come to one site? And it's not virtual, it's not Zoom? Or?
No, it's held at St. Mel's.
Okay, in Fair Oaks, yeah.
Yeah, they have a nice big room for that. We tried to kind of do it during COVID, but it wouldn't have been the same with Zoom because it's kind of Jeopardy style. The kids have buzzes to press when they know the answer, and then you know they're eliminated just for that round if they get it wrong. So it really needs to be in person, and it's really exciting because parents and grandparents come and cheer the kids on. And
well, I remember reading it was a couple of years ago. There was one guy on Jeopardy who was just unstoppable. And was going up against some really talented people. And they said that he just had a better technique with the buzzer. He was always first. And that almost everybody knew the right answer. But he somehow, maybe it bypassed his brain or something. Maybe his brain was in his thumb. But it was that's why he kept winning, because he always got to answer the question. You know, and it wasn't that the person next to him knew the answer too, but it was too late, you know. And I thought, that's weird.
Yeah, with the Math Bowl, whoever buzzes in first gets their chance to answer first. And then if their answer is incorrect, then if you can buzz in next, you get your chance.
Yeah, so, and if that had been your answer, now you're glad you didn't.
Yes.
you didn't say that one, and now you're rethinking it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do they run it? They have the like an MC or a
yes.
judge or
yeah. He's been doing it for years. He's done it with public schools too. But about 18 years ago, he started doing it with diocesan schools, and that's when we got into it. And it's very challenging. Like, I couldn't do the fifth grade math. So mm-hmm. it's not just if you're good in math. It's if you are really beyond grade level and have the confidence and to be in something like that. And so it's really special that kids in our diocese have the opportunity to compete in something like that if they wish to.
And where does the curriculum for it come from? Is it like some national group says, here's a great contest for you? Or how
you know, I'm not really sure where it comes from, but like I said, it's really challenging material. At first, our faculty would take turns working with the kids, kind of asking them mental math questions. And we'd kind of do that on our own time. And then we're always looking for opportunities to have grade levels kind of work together and do things together, just kind of to build our school community. So about 10 or 12 years ago, our eighth graders started taking it over. And so they take turns. The questions are already written for them, but they take turns quizzing the students. And the younger kids really enjoy that, and it makes the eighth graders, you know, feel really good about helping younger ones. So that works well for us.
Very good. Well, congratulations to you. Congratulations to Everett.
Yes.
And congratulations to St. Francis School.
Yep. We look forward to it next year, too.
Very good. Ronnie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
God bless you and all your students.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, this is Katie Parada, Executive Director of Catholic Schools for the Diocese of Sacramento, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
I will. Welcome back, and we're pleased to welcome in Kevin Stasko. Kevin, good to have you here. I hope you have a boat with a great Evinrude Motor, and you're going to cruise the Sacramento and the Delta.
We are going to have like an epic week next week.
This is so exciting.
Yeah, and again, it's so hard to get the word out, right? And people don't really know what it is, but we have the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage coming through the Diocese of Sacramento next week. And the pilgrimage, there's four simultaneous processions,
right,
or pilgrimages coming from four different corners of the United States. And if you go on the National Eucharistic Revival website, you can click on the pilgrimage. You can see the routes. You can RSVP for different events that you want to go to. You can kind of like, you can plan out your own route. There's a whole thing. You can make your own Eucharistic pilgrimage around your neighborhood if you want. And they talk about
all heading for Indianapolis.
But anyway, we're all heading to Indianapolis for the National Eucharistic Congress in July. And so it starts on Pentecost on Sunday. And it's going to start in San Francisco. And it'll be there for a couple days. And then we get it, just Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And then Monday evening, it's going to be in our diocese in Vallejo.
So this is the actual physical presence, similar, I mean, not similar in most ways, but like the Olympic torch, where it's physically.
It's similar to that. It's a little different in that, you know, we're going to be consecrating a new Eucharist every day. So
every day
there'll be at least one Mass,
right,
where the Eucharist will be consecrated.
Right.
And put in the monstrance. So,
and then be physically
Most of the time that'll happen first thing in the morning. So
right.
the Eucharist will arrive at a church. There'll be Eucharistic adoration all night, or it'll be put in the tabernacle overnight.
Right.
The next morning, the consecrated host that's coming from the previous day will be consumed during the Mass, where
Very
we
good.
Consecrate a new host
Very good.
To put in the Luna, to put it back in the monstrance, to take the monstrance to the next place. So
we're
doing something that I think there's one other diocese now that's doing a river trip, but that was the bishop's idea, that the Sacramento River, which was named after the Blessed Sacrament,
right,
the city of Sacramento that was named after the river that was named after the Blessed Sacrament, and our cathedral, the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament, obviously named after the Blessed
right.
Sacrament, that it would be very important that part of our procession be on the river and stopping at the parishes along the river.
So, well, and, you know, interesting, too, lots of rivers originate in a lot of different places. The Sacramento River originates in the Diocese of Sacramento as
yep.
well. Up in you can see it bubble out of the ground in the city of Mount Shasta.
It's beautiful. I mean, I guess we should have just taken the river all the way up
yeah.
to Lake Shasta, or
yeah.
Mount Shasta.
Yeah,
that would have been interesting. But we figured we had to get it across.
Well, you got to get east, and unfortunately, the river is a kind of a north south river.
Well, and it's just so we're just gonna come up from Vallejo to Sacramento,
which
on the
is
river.
The Sacramento River. Yeah,
and we're stopping at we'll start in Vallejo, and we will process to the water's edge and get on a boat. That boat will take us to Benicia.
Benicia. Now, is that in fresh water at that point still? We're not out in a bay anywhere? Might be a 50-50 deal.
I think it's kind of a 50-50 deal.
Yeah.
We're not all the way in the river there.
Right.
And we're going to be processing from the Benicia Marina
right.
To the parish. Have a short period of adoration, about half
Saint
an hour.
Dominic and Benicia,
Saint Dominic's in Benicia, then process back to the boat. Then we'll be taking the boat up to Rio Vista, and we'll be doing the same thing there. We'll be docking at the city hall, has their own dock there.
Does it really?
So we're going to be on the city hall dock. We're going to, you know, park the boat there, and we'll process to the parish and have about a half hour of adoration, then back to
That's
the boat.
What Saint Joseph?
St. Joseph.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go up to St. Joseph's in Clarksburg. So,
oh, good.
We're going to stop in Clarksburg. We'll probably, that involves, that. We tried to organize a procession, but it involved closing down the highway and two different counties. So I think we're driving the Eucharist to the property at the St. Joseph's in Clarksburg, and we'll do a procession around the parking lot and then a night prayer with the bishop there.
And it will stay there?
Yeah, it'll stay there overnight.
Yeah. Hope the levee holds.
Yeah,
that's
so.
A parish that is really on the river.
It's really on there. It really is on the river. It's funny that we can't just park the boat and get out
yeah,
in the parish because it's right
and
there.
It is,
but we have to go to the marina on the other side of the the other side of the river, and then we have to drive across, and it's kind of complicated to drive across. You can't really walk.
And right now, with all the snow melt, that parish is below river level.
You go
down to get into that parish, as you know. Yeah.
So anyway, so we're going to do that. That's the first day. And then the next day, we're going to be leaving from the Freeport Marina in Clarksburg and going all the way to downtown Sacramento. There's a new public dock that was built right in front of the Ziggurat building there.
Right.
And it's first come, first serve, so hopefully we're going to get there early enough. So
that would be on
somebody
the,
with cones or something.
Yeah, that'll be on the west Sacramento side of the river.
Yeah, west Sacramento side of the river. And so then we're going to drive the Eucharist to Loaves and Fishes for an adoration at Friendship Park there. And then we are going to have a procession across the Tower Bridge to the cathedral starting at 11 in West Sacramento.
From the Ziggurat building.
Yeah, so in between the Ziggurat building and the Tower Bridge is a public park called, I think it's called Riverside Park or something. It's right there. There's a plaza and a park there. So we're going to gather in that park, and then we'll process across the Tower Bridge to the cathedral. And then we'll have Mass is at 12:10 at the cathedral, their daily Mass. And then usually, if that's a Wednesday, usually on Wednesdays at the cathedral, after that Mass, they have adoration till 4. So we'll have adoration till 4 o'clock there. And that'll be the end of that day. The following day is going to be in Folsom. So we'll drive the Eucharist to Folsom, to the prison.
Yes.
And we'll have an early morning Mass in the prison. And then we'll have a procession from the prison to St. John the Baptist Parish in Folsom. And there'll be adoration all day there until about 6 o'clock. And then we'll drive the Eucharist to Holy Trinity. At Holy Trinity Parish, we're going to have a holy hour for youth with Bishop-elect Ray. And I forgot to mention that Bishop Soto is doing this whole journey.
Right.
It was his idea, so I told him, you have to come.
Yeah.
So he's going to be at everything. The only thing that he's missing is the morning boat ride into downtown Sacramento and the adoration at Loaves and Fishes, because he's going to be doing Christian Brothers Baccalaureate Mass at the cathedral that day. So he'll be going to the cathedral for that, then coming to do the procession back to the cathedral on Wednesday, the 22nd.
Wow.
So anyway, but it's exciting. And then the last day, we're going to be in Placerville in the morning for Mass. We're going to visit the Mother Teresa Maternity Home. And then we're going to go to Tahoe, where we'll do adoration late afternoon in Tahoe, and then followed by a boat of fluvial procession, as the bishop says.
You're not going to try to go up the American River, are you?
Fluvial procession across Lake Tahoe to Incline, Nevada, where we will celebrate adoration with our bishop. Will also celebrate adoration with the community in Incline, Nevada, to end our pilgrimage.
So, and then the Diocese of Reno.
Then the Diocese of Reno will take it. I think they're going to Reno. They're driving to Reno the next day. So there's a lot of opportunity. People can go to scd.org/celebrate to see when and where all these things are happening. And you're welcome to participate. And I was telling people, they're like, oh, do I have to walk the whole journey? Do I have to take 4 days off work? I said, no, just come to something, right? Come to one of the Masses, come to the many opportunities for adoration. Just come and, watch the river and watch us come by on the boats, whatever you'd like to do. Come up to Tahoe. If you're going up to Tahoe for Memorial Day weekend anyway, you could start your weekend the right way with adoration at the parish.
It's great to be in the Lake Tahoe area that time of year. Is the snow's still up there and it's still melting, and you see all of God's creation in its beauty.
So it should be it should be an exciting 4 days and a great way to kind of cap off the Eucharistic revival. Last 3 years we've been going through the Eucharistic revival in the United States, and so I think it'll be a good time, and a sacred time for our diocese, a special time. We've been trying to focus on different communities each day. So the first day, the focus is on migrant workers and farm workers, and that's on Tuesday the 21st. And then on Wednesday, the 22nd, we're focusing on the homeless. On Thursday, the 23rd, we're focusing on the incarcerated and on youth. And then on the 24th, we're focusing on mothers in need and then also the environment going across Tahoe. Last session. So hopefully we can spend some time in front of the Blessed Sacrament praying for those different communities and concerns. And I think it'll be a really nice experience for everyone involved. We are giving out fans.
Mm-hmm.
There's a commemorative fan. So if you come to one of these things, you can get a limited edition. And we don't, you know, we only printed it, so we don't know how many to print. So there's only like 200 to 400 at each of the events that are going to be.
It's not an electric fan. It's a fan actual, that you
fold out.
You provide the exercise.
You provide the exercise. Yes, for
very
for
good
use at Mass or on your journey, on your pilgrimage of life. We'll have those available. We also have a prayer card to commemorate that we'll be passing out at all these different events and activities. And so I'm excited about it. I think it'll be a good experience for everyone who turns out.
I want to buy a 4-day pass. You know, I want to be a tourist and start.
We should have done that. You and I should have done a bus.
Yeah, a bus, yeah.
Do the whole pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Bob Dunning. We could got a boat and a bus. And just taking people.
An amphibious bus.
There you go. But anyway, no, it should be very exciting. And again, it's the 20th. It starts actually in the evening of the 20th. In Vallejo and goes all the way till the late evening of the 24th on Friday. And it's a Friday of Memorial Day weekend too, so we're worried about the traffic.
I was going to say you may park the car and hike down to the American River and just go.
Yeah, it might be faster. Right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how many. Well, you also pass the Yuba River up there when you head to Tahoe if you're on 80, and there's a bunch of rivers that.
Rivers.
So when your friends, neighbors, associates, non-Catholics ask you about the Eucharistic procession, do you hear much about that? Not the procession, but the revival. Mm-hmm. I hear it a lot, and people say, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you tell them?
Well, I mean, we've long taught in the Catholic Church that the Eucharist is the source and summit of what we do, right? And so I think, you know, it started from a concern that our Catholic people didn't really believe in the real presence,
right? Yeah.
But I think the importance of the revival is to just refocus people on the centrality of that mystery, of that sacrament to our lives as Catholics, right? I think a lot of times, I mean, I think that the Blessed Sacrament has power. It's the taste of heaven, right? But it's also a piece of the divine in our midst, right? And so I think that the Blessed Sacrament does have power, and sacraments have power, and miracles do happen because of that, right? And we don't, I think it's become, I think we kind of fall into this, where it's almost just like a ritual without much meaning, or we don't really believe in the power of the Eucharist anymore. So I would hope that people spending time in front of the Blessed Sacrament in adoration and going to Mass and really reflecting on, what does it mean to really consume Jesus and Jesus to become part of me, right? I mean, there's a powerful symbol, right? The powerful symbol is the real presence is now inside of me, and now I need to do what Jesus did.
Exactly.
I need to continue the mission because I am the body of Christ now, right? And I think so often too, I think we get wrapped up in the prayers of the Mass and the ritual of the Mass, and we stay there. But it's really like Life Team used to say, instead of at the end of the Life Team Mass, they got in trouble, right? Because they used to say, instead of saying go in peace or the Mass is ended, they would say the Mass never ends. It must be lived, right? That's what they would say.
Yeah.
The Mass never ends. It must be lived. I don't know if that's an exact quote, but they had a phrase, and that's what they would say at the end of the Life Team Mass. And so they got in trouble because they were telling priests to change the Mass.
Oh, sure.
Don't do that,
right? Don't do that.
That's not how we do it, right? It's kind of like when the deacons start to say all kinds of creative things at the end of Mass. That's not what they're supposed to be saying. Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, yes.
But I, you know, like, or there's like four possible responses, and some of the deacons say all four in the same thing. So anyway, but that idea that at the end of Mass, that, you know, that really is the beginning. But also that this idea that the Blessed Sacrament, the Eucharist, should mean something to us, but should also have the effect of changing us.
Oh, sure.
You know, of creating something new, of empowering us to continue Christ's mission in the world, right? And I think I'm not sure if people, you know, are getting that or you know there. So I think that idea of like, let's refocus on this. Let's talk about what this mystery really means. Let's talk about what this mystery means, you know, to us as Catholic people, and what it means to our whole spirituality, which is really focused or centered, should be centered on the Eucharist. But then also, what does it mean in our personal life? So what is happening because I consume the Eucharist? What is happening because I spend time in front of the Blessed Sacrament? What is my relationship with Jesus? And how is this sacrament, enhancing that, improving that, expanding that? You know, so I do think it's really important. I do think there's another piece of that, right, is exposing people who aren't Catholic and don't understand it, right? So that they go, like, why are they doing that?
Yep.
Why are they worshiping a piece of bread?
Yep.
I don't get it, right? But it's such an opportunity for evangelization there, right, to sit down and say, oh, no, that's not what we're doing. Here's why we do this. Here's what this means to us, right? And an idea of us to witness, right? So I used to tell my confirmation students that part of their job during the process of being prepared for confirmation was they should ask five random people in the parish why they're Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And if nobody has a good answer, then they probably shouldn't become Catholic, right? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
because really it's like it's our community should be able to witness to as to why, right?
Right.
Not just like, oh, this is a neat thing. You know, it's like, it's like, you know, like you ask somebody, why are you part of CrossFit Gym or whatever, right? They have definite reasons.
Oh, they do,
right?
Yeah.
They know why. They, you know, I've tried other gyms and this is it and here's why and, you know, my buddies are here, whatever it is, right? So what is that, what is that story? And so I just think we need to be able to witness to the power of Jesus in our lives. We need to be able to witness to the power of the Eucharist and the other sacraments in our lives. And I believe that the Eucharistic revival gives us an opportunity, one, to really reflect on what we believe and spend some time learning about what we believe, going to Mass and adoration more often, right?
Yep.
And then, but I think what I hope that leads us to is the ability to be able to witness to our faith, to be able to witness to our faith in the Eucharist, to our faith in Jesus, to our relationships with Christ, to Christ's mission and why we feel called to it, and how the Eucharist really, you know, like literally nourishes us for that journey or that battle, whatever your perspective is. Some people are all about the battle, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the battle. That's fine, but we're being nourished for a mission, right?
Exactly.
You can call that a battle. You can call that, you know, whatever you want to call that, but it's that idea that we're going out into the world, you know, to win souls for Christ, to spread his message, right? So that's what I would hope that the revival would do, right? And I think there was some people that were really worried that, oh, you know, we're going to do the revival. It's all going to be about adoration. We're going to lose, the Mass, right? But I don't think that's true.
No,
do think the Eucharistic revival is about, you know, about the power of the Eucharist that comes through the sacrifice of the Mass.
Sure.
And comes through us consuming it, becoming part of the body of Christ. And, that adoration leads us back to that, you know, celebration of the Mass.
Well, and you said something that just went right through my heart when you said we partake in a piece of the divine. Like, you know, you think of the divine, you think of the creator of everything, and you go, oh, my goodness gracious, you know, and there's a piece of the divine right there.
Well, and it's supposed to also be like, you know, the it's called a lot of things, right? It's the foretaste of heaven, right?
Right.
So like, it's like, I want to know what heaven's like. Well, I'm not sure exactly how to explain it, but, you know, go to Mass, receive the Eucharist, understand what that is. That's gonna be a piece of it, right? It's a piece of the divine, and I do think it's all, again, our faith is really about relationships, right? Jesus asks us to be in right relationship with God, in right relationship with creation, in right relation with other people, just like, you know, Adam and Eve were before the fall.
Right.
So before the fall, they had the perfect relationship with Jesus. They had the perfect relationship with others, each other. They had a perfect relationship with creation, and then they messed all that up, right? And so how can we get back into that right relationship? I think part of it is only found in the Eucharist, right? Because it's how we can get close to Christ in a very intimate way, and how we can experience the divine and, you know, get a foretaste of that, you know, where all the relationships are right again. Right?
Yeah. Well, you know, in all the years I've done this show, 25, frequently I'll have a convert on, not because they were a convert necessarily, but you start to hear their story. Many, many, many of them came across because of the Eucharist. You know, that it was like you had something my mind didn't have. We have some of them, you know, from other Christian religions had a symbol, and it truly was presented as a symbol, you know, but it wasn't presented as a real presence. Yeah. And it was something like, it was almost like, you guys really believe it, you know, and it was compelling.
Well, and I think it, I mean, the Eucharist is, it does have a power as a symbol, right?
It's still super powerful, that's right?
And it totally moves people.
Absolutely.
Right? But it's like, that's, you know, we believe, you know, our belief is, I think you said, deeper, right?
Right.
It's a deeper belief in the fact that, no, this is really, I mean, he really meant it. It's you know, it's the real presence. I just think, and if we can start to really, you know, if we can start to believe that, and I think live that, you know, I think it really changes. It changes us. It changes our perspective. It keeps us on the mission. It keeps us passionate for what we do and who we are. And I think that's, you know, in a sense, I think that's the revival I think we need, is kind of like a more of a renewed passion for the mission.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel like a lot of times, me, myself, and members of my team, we're the youth ministry and the catechesis department, whatever. I mean, sometimes we just feel like we're cheerleaders, and nobody else, you know, it's like, come on, you know, we can do this. This is great. The Eucharist is awesome. We're going to do this, you know, and you get nothing. You know, you get no energy back, right? But that's what we need. Is we need more people that can be who can witness to their faith in an authentic way. We need more people to be cheerleaders for this, because it's so important and what so many people need, right? They need light. They need a little divine in their hopelessness, right?
Yep.
I was really struck by a statistic that I heard recently, and that was that 44% of our young people live in a persistent state of sadness or hopelessness.
Ooh. Wow.
Persistent state of sadness or hopelessness based on the survey they did on mental health. And that shocked me. 44% of young people. We're not going to talking about like
young people,
old
you
guys
were,
like you and me, you know, like
expect,
you know, like,
optimism,
you know, like,
from,
you know,
kids.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, you expect
enthusiasm.
But that idea that persistent sadness and hopelessness, right? And the other statistic in that study I thought was so interesting was that 11 years is the time that somebody who has mental illness, the average young person, it's 11 years before they get any treatment.
Oh, wow.
Right? So they exhibit, you know, whatever, signs of depression, anxiety.
Right.
It's 11 years is the average before somebody actually gets some kind of treatment for that, right? And so my sense with this sense of hopelessness, like, you know, part, you know, again, obviously part of it is, you know, medical, needs to be treated by a doctor, whatever.
Sure.
But like, what do we have to offer as a Catholic Church besides hope, right?
You know,
I mean, I feel like we have this 50 days of Easter we're supposed to be celebrating. We still have a whole another week,
right?
Or 2 weeks. We still have almost two more weeks, right?
Right.
We stopped celebrating Easter a long time ago.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Lent, we do it. You know, we love everything from Lent, from the ashes to the palms,
right?
And everything in between, we love it. We love to wear purple. We love Stations of the Cross. We love going to confession. We love, you know, giving up meat. We love it. We love all of that. But then we get to Easter. We can't even celebrate a week. We're done with it.
We're done.
Maybe we make it to Divine Mercy Sunday. But after that, we're not celebrating. We're not.
Yeah.
I mean, why not, right? If we
really
believe what we say we believe. And then, so no, that's why the world needs the Eucharist. That's why the world needs the Catholic Church. They need our hope, our light. You know, we need to bring that out. How can we do that? I mean, that's why we need to celebrate Easter for 50 days, because the world needs it, right? The world needs that hope.
Yeah. We just, it's funny because there have been a few changes since I was a kid. You know, I don't think I knew the word transubstantiation when I was a kid. But boy, the one thing that has not changed is the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. No, nobody's ever touched that one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so Kevin, always a joy. I've got to get my map out, and I mean I know where all these places are, and I've been to all of them, but I like the route very much.
Yeah.
And
you can follow it. Like I said, the national website, you can like map it out. You can look at by diocese. You can see where it's going. It's actually going through Nevada up north, up to Idaho, and around. It's going through one of the dioceses in Oregon, which I was surprised by because I thought they were trying to get to Indianapolis.
Yeah,
part of the reason we
wanted to go through both dioceses
because we thought we'd go. So they're going up to Oregon. Well, the piece of Oregon and Idaho.
The two dioceses in Oregon are divided north south. You know, one's on the west and one's on the east. And if you're heading to Indianapolis, you're going to miss the Diocese of Portland of Portland. And you're going to hit the Diocese of Baker.
Yeah, I think that's where they're going. They're going through Baker.
Yeah, so they're
going
to go a little bit west.
So anyway, but you should take a look at the route. It's interesting. And then there's four different routes, right? It's a big undertaking. I was just on the phone with the national rep. Madison is the lead of our pilgrimage that's coming through. But the pilgrims there's six young adults, two seminarians, and two priests that are coming. They'll be with the whole. The priests, I think, are switching out every couple weeks, but the other eight of them are going to be all the way across together.
We may have to plan our family vacation and try to make all four parts of one part of all four.
You could do that.
I think you could.
I think you could easily do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin, always a joy.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you do. We'll.
Thank you. Thank you too, Bob.
That's God. Bless you and your family and this great procession. And that's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.
God bless everyone. I want to take a minute to talk about the annual Catholic Appeal, the 2024 annual Catholic Appeal. So important here in the Diocese of Sacramento. So many ministries supported by the annual Catholic Appeal and the people in the Diocese of Sacramento have always been so generous, but a wonderful brochure, a pamphlet really that you may have received in the mail, and on the back cover, a picture, maybe it's front, I guess that's the front cover, Deacon Kevin Staskow says, I really think that everyone has something to give. When Jesus was literally dying on the cross, he found the strength to turn to the thief being crucified next to him and minister to that person. So often we have all kinds of excuses not to reach out to those next to us. Indeed, today you will be with me in paradise. And you look through this brochure and you will learn the many, many, many ministries that are supported by the annual Catholic Appeal. And 25% of your donation goes back to the parishes for social ministry at your parish. 50% supports charities, Catholic Charities of Sacramento, and the members in that are Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano, Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, which serves Butte, Glen, Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties in this 20-county diocese, and Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services right here in the greater Sacramento area. Also, associate members are Camp Recreation, serving Northern California, the Mother Teresa Maternity Home in Placerville, the Rancho Cordova Food Locker in Greater Sacramento, the Upper Room Dining Hall in Placerville. Many of you who have worked at those places are very familiar with those places or have availed yourself of the wonderful services they provide. 25% supports education, seminary and formation, and Catholic school tuition assistance. Partners in the annual Catholic Appeal and Catholic Charities of Sacramento include Anderson Cottonwood Christian Assistance, Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home right here in Sacramento that does such wonderful work, the Catholic Ladies Relief Society up in Chico, Community Assistance Network in Greenville, Portola, and Quincy up in the hills, Loaves and Fishes in Sacramento, which just does wonderful work with the homeless, Sacramento Life Center, which has saved so many lives here in the Sacramento area, Salvation Army Food Shelf in Susanville, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and their seven district councils, the North State, Placer, Yuba, Sutter, Butte, Sacramento East, South Sacramento Elk Grove, Sacramento Metro Area, and Yolo Delta and Solano. Also, the Stanford Settlement Neighborhood Center in Sacramento and the Wellsprings Women's Center in Sacramento, plus Yuba City, Yuba Sutter, Right to Life, the two counties just north of Sacramento. More than 100 programs provide things like counseling, emergency fund, shelter and clothing, permanent and transitional housing, job training, pregnancy counseling, post and prenatal care, independent living skills, mentoring, parenting skills, after school care, refugee resettlement, citizenship and immigration services, and jail ministry. Our gifts help people who are mentally ill, homeless, disaster survivors, immigrants, elderly, developmentally disabled, incarcerated, working families, refugees, at-risk youth, the unborn, pregnant women, the hungry, and single parents. Such a wide, wide range of our Catholic mission here on this earth and in this Diocese of Sacramento. One of the programs through Northern Valley Catholic Social Services is the Court of Appointed Special Advocate Program, which is operated out of all the superior courts in the state of California, and it partners with Northern Valley Catholic Social Service to help kids who need advocates in the courts. They talk about in this pamphlet a young woman named Isabel, who is devoted to ensuring a positive support system for foster kids now and for their future. As a court-appointed special advocate, a program administered with compassion and dedication by Northern Valley Catholic Social Service, Isabel gives kids the voice they need in court to have a positive path in life. She was once in foster care herself. The severe trauma a child goes through is all too familiar. Today, she's reunited with her parents, has a family of her own, and is focused on becoming a lawyer. Northern Valley Catholic Social Services gives her the opportunity to advocate in court for children with stories like hers. Again, the annual Catholic Appeal, give generously, give whatever you can, whether it's a small amount, a large amount. Also, more men can say yes to the call to the priesthood. Support from the annual Catholic Appeal helps seminarian Eric Patrick, who is pictured in this brochure, to become Father Eric Patrick this past June. We've had him on our program, a delightful priest. Father Patrick is earnestly hopeful that he can be a conduit for the experience of God's mercy and love. With costs offset by the appeal, the 12 men now in seminarian formation can focus less on financial worries and more on preparing to serve in our parishes. The annual Catholic Appeal, a wonderful, wonderful way to support so many ministries in the Diocese of Sacramento. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.
Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, its valleys and mountains, and I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here, walking down one. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I question my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me, cause I need you. Hold me. Well, I've questioned significance, meaning and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter at all? Well, I question my friendships, alliance, dependence. Who will still be here when I fall?